I tell you, and I know I've said this each night, this has been a special series for me. Maybe because in our congregation we are talking about and struggling with so many of the same things that you are, and it's given me much pause. And when you're the preacher at a congregation that is struggling in that way, and this is kind of a new experience for me. I've not had it in other places. But when that's the case, you kind of ask yourself, what am I doing wrong? What should I teach that's different? What should I do that's different? And so it's a great, great opportunity for us to examine ourselves. There's a couple of other reasons why this has been so thoroughly enjoyable for me, and I want to tell you tonight on this last night. One is that you asked for it. I mean, you looked at a circumstance and you said, we need to be built up, we need to be encouraged, we need to be set on fire a little bit about how to grow and where to go. So it's allowed me, believe it or not, allowed me to preach in a way that you can't necessarily do everywhere and be effective, because you were looking for that. And I know that had you invited a different preacher, you would have gotten different lessons. Would have been done in a different way. It might have been a lot better. But what I appreciate is that, and I didn't know this really going in. I had to think about it in the preparation of it. You know, when I think about, well, what are some lessons that are encouraged? Well, there's a lot of ways to preach lessons that encourage. But each night this week, what I've really said is, here's what you need to do to change. And yet you've taken that and seen that as encouragement. Quite often, you know, when you lay obligation upon people, they don't see that as a positive thing. They see that as a negative thing. But as you have heard the lessons, your comments to me have been very encouraging to me. And we're tied together. You know, I don't know that we'll ever have opportunity to have the exact audiences that we've had where I can be with you and my wife and us be together again, but we're tied together for eternity. But we're tied in a special way because of this particular series of lessons and how my heart has gone out to you, and I think your heart has to us. If I don't see you for years, there will not be a week that goes by that you won't be in my prayers and that I won't be thinking, I wonder what's happening down there, if I don't happen to know. You know, what is it that's happening down there? So I have very, very much appreciated. Now, there's something else I want to tell you about. I've got some cards here. And I want to give each of you one of these cards as you leave or whatever like this. And I'll tell you what it is, front and back, covered on the front and back. And it's everything that I've preached this week. Which, by the way, tells you I really talked a long time to get it down to such a little bitty bunch. So I probably over-talked, didn't I? Probably talked a little longer than I needed to. Now, here's what I want you to do with it. Now, I know you don't have to do with it. Now, here's what I want you to do with it. Any of you ever carry anything in your Bible? You know, just put it in there. Now, I carry stuff in my Bible, but I try not to carry much in my Bible very often. Of course, my Bible's getting kind of old, and the more I carry in it, the worse condition that it gets in, but you know what happens when I carry something in my Bible? I've got it there, and then somebody says, well, turn to such and such. And I thumb through, and of course, it pops open at that page. And it's an aggravation, so I take it, and I put it, you know, back in another spot of the Bible that I think I'm not going to be using for a little while. I want it to be an aggravation for you. I'd love for you to leave it there, because what happens? We're humans. We're humans. And what happens is we get very excited about something right at a particular time. And then a few weeks pass and a few months pass, and we have a tendency to slip back. It's the easiest thing in the world for human beings to slip backwards, which is really nothing more than another way of saying we're standing still once again in the Lord. But this will remind you of the week that you came together to ask yourself, how can we move forward in the Lord? And so it will either keep on encouraging you, It might send you on a guilt trip if you're not doing it, and that's okay. We need to feel guilty when we're not doing everything that we ought to be doing, right? And maybe you'll look at it and measure yourself and say, you know, I really have helped there and there, but not here and here. And so you don't have to do that, and I realize that a lot of people will just lose this card, but I'd like to encourage you, put it in your Bible and keep it there for 3 or 4 years and see if it doesn't make a difference on what it reminds you. Because what will happen, you know, someone wrote one time, you've heard the story about the man that was going to war, and his mother gave him a Bible. And on the inside page of the Bible, you know, one of those blank pages like you always have there, you can write things on, she put, "This book will keep you from sin, but sin will keep you from this book." And that's the way we are. In other words, if you're doing something wrong, you don't want to constantly be in front of somebody who tells you all the time you're doing something wrong. You want to find a different friend. You know, somebody's not going to make you feel bad all of the time. And sometimes that's the way we are, that when something is in front of us, like this card will be, all of the time, and reminding us of what we intended but didn't, we sort of lay it aside, and pretty soon we've forgotten about it. You know, I'm like the Hebrew writer said, "I am persuaded better things of you." I think that you have some great intentions to do some great things. And so I hope that this will be a help. Tonight's lesson, of course, not on here because it's too much talking. I just couldn't fit it all on there. But I would like for you, if you would, after the services, I think I have enough for all the adults at least to have one. So please pick one up. I'll be glad to hand those to you. And whatever I have left, if I have some left, I'll leave here for you. I told you last night that I was thinking about speaking to you about the seven churches of Asia. Well, I've changed my mind. Matter of fact, I want to continue last night's lesson, and this is on here, on the back, the last lesson. There's something about that last night I didn't get to. You know, I preached too long already, and I was running out of time, so I didn't get to it, but I think it's really, really important. So if you have your Bibles, turn them back to the book of Hebrews in the 10th chapter. And I want us to consider verses 23, 24, and 25 once again. In verse 23, the Hebrew writer says, "Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised," speaking of Christ. So the problem was, you remember, we read all of those passages in the book of Hebrews that indicated that people were leaving, and the Hebrew writer was pleading with them to hold on. This is one of those passages. Let us hold fast. Don't let go. And then in verse 24, he kind of gives a plan for how to do that. "Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works." Here's where you do it. Here's how you do it. Here's when you do it. "Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together." See, things were no different then than they are now. When we leave this place, most of us go our separate ways, don't we? And we don't see each other again, for the most part, until the next service. Well, that was true then, too. I mean, they all had businesses, they had families, and many of them did not see each other again until the next service. Now, there were exceptions, obviously, just like there are exceptions here. Some of you will see each other 2 or 3 times this week, but some of them didn't. So he understood that it was in the assembly. It's in the assembly that we really have opportunity to have the greatest impact. And not just the assembly of us sitting here with somebody speaking to us or even with us singing. Those are very important, as all the parts of worship are very important. But the assembly, the fact that here we are together, and we're going to get to mingle beforehand, and we're going to get to mingle afterwards. And sometimes we just use that mingling for small talk. But he meant for us to use that mingling to consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. We do that because we're in that assembly. And so he says, "Not forsaking the assembly together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." And the part that I think is so vital here. Now, we understand the word exhort in English, don't we? It's kind of like to persuade someone, to encourage someone, to build up someone. But in the Greek language, the language this was written in, it's more than that. It is the word, it's real simple. It's the word parakaleo. Our word parallel, right? And by the way, if you're reading the modern translation, it may say admonishing one another rather than exhorting. It's the same Greek word regardless. Okay, so parakaleo. Para means to lay alongside, right? Like parallel, lay alongside. Kaleo means to call out to someone. So what he's saying is that the way that you exhort one another, that the way that you encourage and admonishing one another, is that you call someone to be by your side and do it with you. Remember I said last night, we did talk about very briefly the idea, you cannot lead where you do not go, right? Well, that's really what he's saying here. He's saying the way that you get other people involved is that you do it together. And by the way, for the leaders of a congregation, that's why it is so important. I've heard people say, well, you know, we don't have any programs. We think, you know, people can do Christianity without programs. But you know what programs do? If they're done right, they make sure to involve everyone. That's what this verse is talking about. Get someone to go with you. You remember that in Matthew chapter 10, when Jesus sent out the disciples on the limited commission, and it's recorded also in Luke, that he sent them out two by two. Proverb writer said two are better than one because they have reward for their labors. They accomplish more. They do more. That's what he's trying to say here. He's saying, now remember what we said last night? It's not just, here's what I want you to do, but here's what I want you to get the brethren to do. See, let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. So the task for me is to get you acting in love and doing good works. That's my task. That's what he's telling me to do here. And obviously, I'm going to have to do that if I'm going to get you to do it. And then he says, here's the way we do it. We do it by admonishing one another. What does that mean? Call them to be by your side. You know, if you're going door knocking, call somebody to go door knocking with you. If you're going to visit the hospital, get somebody to go visit the hospital with you. When I was a young Christian, well, that's not really true, a young man, before I was a Christian even, I had two teachers in my junior high and high school classes at the church. And I don't know why, and maybe they did this for everybody. They didn't tell me whether they did or not, and I didn't really ask. But I know that they made a special case out of me. Because they would call me up on Monday or Tuesday or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and say, I'm going to come by and pick you up. I need you to run with me somewhere. Well, okay. I mean, that was an adult. I was a kid. You know, you didn't disrespect that. If that's what they said, you said, okay, I'm going to do that. Even though I didn't know. And what those visits were. They were to people in hospitals. They were to people in their homes. They were even for Bible studies. Matter of fact, I remember, just to tell you, how a teenager, I was into the work of the Lord, even though I wasn't a Christian yet. But, you know, they'd say, well, we're going to go study with so-and-so in a particular place. We have a place in St. Louis. It was called Weber Hills. Weber Hills was where 90% of the people that I knew lived. It was a huge 50-acre subdivision. I mean, it was big for a subdivision. And I knew everybody there. So when we were going over there, of course, we're going for Bible study. What I do? I have to take my Bible, right? So I got my Bible. But you know what? Everybody there, the kids, that's the way I looked at it, everybody there knew me. And I didn't yet want to know I was studying that Bible, so I'd sort of tuck it down, you know. We'd walk up the street, and I'd have that Bible hidden right here by my side. But you know what those men taught me? They taught me, number one, there's no shame in talking to people about the Bible. And they taught me, number two, that the way to do it is to do it, because that's what they were doing. One of them was named Hoover Delbridge. Hoover was an aggravation to a lot of people. He was. He was an aggravation to a lot of people. He was a stickler for the truth. That aggravated a lot of folks. And the other was named Sam Mankin. And Sam was a man that worked with a lot of young people, and he just thought that he should pester me. And so we did a lot of stuff together. But isn't it unique that I remember their names? I remember their names because they did what this verse is saying. They took me by their side to provoke unto love and to good works. When you have a new convert in the class, you know what they need to do? They need to be put to work. We have a friend named Fred Yoakum who was converted as an adult. And he was adamant. He was adamant against any church. He just thought they were, you know, all hypocrites. But he was a butcher. And it happened that he worked for a man who owned a butcher shop. And the man was a Christian. So, you know, the man would drop hints and say things and so forth like that. Anyway, eventually, it got Fred's interest, and he started listening. They had a Bible study. He became a Christian. The night after he became a Christian, he came and picked Fred. Fred didn't even know he was coming. And the man came, his name was Gene. He came and picked Fred up and said, "Fred, I need you to come with me. We're going to go have a Bible study with so-and-so." Well, see, Fred was new to the church. He didn't know he could say no. He didn't realize that most people didn't do this. He said, "For 6 months, I thought that Christians went every night to hold Bible studies with people." He said, "Because that's what I did." You know, he said, "I didn't know everybody else wasn't doing the same thing." What was that about? It was about this verse. Called alongside and working alongside with them. See, if we're all working alongside each other, how much easier is it to get somebody else to come along and work alongside with us? And how much encouragement does that person get in order to do that? That's our task. Our task in this, you know, it's part of that explanation. I didn't get to the explanation last night. You know, we talked about the exhortation some, but I didn't get to the explanation. It's this idea that how we do it, number one, is by doing the work that needs to be done, but don't do it alone. Bring somebody with you to do that. And that will have an impact. To strengthen the brethren that are there. You know, we need to be close. You know the way to get the closest to people? Is work with them. Think about your family for a minute. In your home, your family is more comfortable than anywhere else. Everybody acts their real self at home. Now, sometimes that's good and sometimes that's not so good. But everybody acts like they really are at home. Why? Well, they've gotten so used to being around those people, they're not going to put up a front, and they're not even going to be spare in what they say and what they feel. They're going to be what they really are. Hopefully what they really are is fully Christian, even at home. But they're going to be what they are. You see, that's what we become when we work together. Because that's the second place that people become well known. Is to their co-workers. They're with them all day long. They see them when challenges come. They see them when things go wrong. They see them when things are right. They see them when they're on cloud nine. They see them when they're down in the dumps. And they learn what people are like. That's what God wants us to do as Christians. He wants us to be together so much. I realize there are some limitations because we earn a living, right? But beyond earning a living, the only limitations to keep us from being with the brethren, doing something somewhere, is us. I've told my congregation this, and maybe we've never caught on to the idea. You know what my dream is for the church? And this is part of those lists. My dream is that when people come home from work, and they eat some supper while they're sitting there at dinner, they say, "Listen, after we get finished, let's run up to the church building and see what's going on." And there's always something going on. Either people are up there just visiting with each other because they enjoy being together, or a group got together and a couple of them went out to go visit somebody or do something, or they're putting up bulletin board, but there's always something going on. So the place to be with our discretionary time, as we talk about it, is not in front of the TV. It's at the church building. And I'll tell you where I picked that up. And I don't know, maybe it was just an unusual thing. When I was a boy, growing up as a teenager, this wasn't true when I was a young boy because, you know, frankly, my parents wouldn't trust me to be alone that much. But when I was a boy growing up as a teenager, our elders set aside a room, a big room, for the teens. It had a door to the outside. It was always open. And the teens could be there anytime they wanted as long as there was at least one adult. That was part of the, you know, part of the requirement. And we violated that, of course. So, you know, we paid the price for that in losing that right. So it was a common thing for us. We had a pretty, not a huge congregation, but large enough. And we had 25 or 30 young people in the teenage group. It was approximately my age or a year or two younger. And it was a common thing, three or four nights a week, for me to go up there to the church building. Sometimes we just hang out. But our group did a lot of spiritual work, including teaching. Why'd that happen? Well, I'm sure it happened, of course, because we had some guidance from some adults about that. It happened because we were together. Because we didn't involve ourselves in other things. And I remember, I wasn't too bright, and my parents were not faithful at this time. I remember when I played ball, that it was basketball, it consumed me. I ate, slept, and drank basketball. And I was away from those activities a lot. And I've come to realize that all of the things that you and I place value on. I mean, think about it. Somebody says, well, you know, it teaches them good. I'm talking about sports or any kind of activity. It teaches them responsibility. It teaches them good sportsmanship. It teaches them integrity. It teaches them to be loyal. It teaches, and on the list go of why we should belong to these organizations. Since when didn't the church teach every one of those things if we were together? Every quality that's valuable, every quality that we place a high priority on is taught in the church, practiced in the church. We somehow think that if it's not gathered around a field or around a gymnasium or doesn't bring us some emotional high, that it couldn't possibly be as good as doing those other things. That's why, and I hope you don't have this here, but I've certainly seen it where I'm at and in other places. That's why parents will say, well, we can't be there on Wednesday night because Johnny, he's got ball practice. Now, we come anytime he doesn't have ball practice. I said, well, why don't you just skip the ball practice? Well, he made a commitment. But they made a commitment to the Lord way before the commitment to ball practice was made. Here's what I'm talking about. This passage in Hebrews 10, 23 through 25 is saying the way for people to stop leaving the church, the way for people to stop becoming so weak, is by being together in the work, by being together where you are provoking one another. It's happening back and forth because you're not trying to do the work alone. You're calling that person alongside. Do this with me. Help me with this. And they get strong while you get strong. The teacher always gets strong as they teach the student. The student always gets strong as they learn from the teacher. And what a great opportunity it is. I was thinking Josh was at PTP this year, and I was. And I've been re-listening to a great many of those sermons. It's just full of ideas. I mean, there are so many ideas about personal evangelism, growing the church, and programs, and this, that. I mean, I would recommend that you listen to all of them somehow, because they'll give you ideas. But it's because it does what this verse says. It brings you together in the work of the Lord. No wonder the point is made in Acts 2 and 42. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, association, if you please, joint participation, sharing, that's the meaning of that word, just what we're talking about here, in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, and in the breaking of bread and in prayers. And then socially, emotionally, it goes on down, a couple of verses in verse 44, it says, and they were together. Who was together? The church was together. And they had all things common. My wife and I were privileged to be involved in the startup of a congregation. And we started with just a little over a dozen people, couples. We were the oldest then. I think we were like 37 or something like that, you know, and we were the oldest. Anyway, it was a young group of people. But the first, I don't know, 6 months or a year, I really didn't keep track of it. We, as a congregation, were together virtually every single night. I mean, it just happened. You know, it's like people would come over to the house, and they would come over, and we'd either talk or we'd sing, and that continued. And, you know, our Sunday morning service had the same number of people as our Sunday evening, as our Wednesday evening, unless we had visitors, but we didn't have anybody laying out. What was that all about? Because we were shoulder to shoulder together in that work. And you know what happened. Well, if you've ever been part of this in more than one place, you know what happened. A little time passed and you converted a few people. They weren't quite as invested as the people who started the congregation. You all know the ones here that are invested. They weren't quite as invested as people who moved in later to the community, were members of the church when they came over there, and then it was just another church, you know. And all of a sudden you started realizing that your Sunday morning attendance was drastically different from your Sunday evening. The invested ones were still there, but you had so many that weren't invested. Brothers and sisters, that ought never to be. This is a good number here tonight, and I don't know which ones are visitors, which ones are not, but I know that there are a number that are not. Should be here every time. You know, barring, I realize there are reasons sometimes that people can't be, but should be here every time. Why? Because of this verse. Here's the way, I mean, this is the Hebrew writer's solution to stopping the wholesale fleeing from the church almost that was happening. And there they were fleeing because they were trying to, out of fear, avoid the persecution that was coming to them. And the Hebrew writer said, here's the answer to that. Do it together. Now, I'm going to start the lesson for tonight. We just finished up last night, okay? My wife and I were at on a mission trip, a medical mission, this year. And everything didn't go quite as smooth as what it needed to be. All of the planning wasn't quite as good as it needed to be. And so one of the men that was in charge of a certain aspect of that, he was frustrated. I mean, nothing was going right for him. And not his fault, because other people were supposed to have made the plans and didn't. And some of it was pretty serious stuff. You know, the inability to take care of somebody who might be on the verge of death. And there are just a number of things that we try to plan for, and it wasn't planned for. It was frustrating. So somebody was talking to him about that. And he said, well, brother, oh, no, I don't know what happened. Somebody was talking to him about that. And because of the frustration, he said, well, Jackie, we're going to double your salary. And he said, brother, I'm not in it for the salary. I'm in it for the retirement plan. Of course, the salary was nothing. But I want to tell you, his retirement plan wasn't nothing. I think about Matthew chapter 25, verses 21, verse 23, said a couple of times, the five-talent man and the two-talent man are brought before the Lord there, and they're giving an account of what they have done with what the Lord has presented them, and they have doubled that amount. And it's not the idea that, oh, it was exactly double. That's not the point. The point is they took what God gave them, they went out and they used it. And because they used it, they were blessed in the results. And by the way, that's always the way it is. You use what God gives you, you're going to be blessed in the results. Well, here was the retirement plan. I look forward to hearing this one. Well done, good and faithful servant. You know, of all the things, this is fascinating. In Luke 17, 8 through 10, in Luke 17, the Lord presents this picture of a man who is wealthy enough to have a servant, but only wealthy enough to have one servant, not a bunch. So the servant works out in the field all day long. And if you know anything about that time, you know that we're talking about a 12-hour day. And I've been overseas where they still do that 12-hour day out there in the field. And he says, now, when the servant comes in, does he tell the servant, that's a great day's work, sit down, let me fix you a meal, get a meal on the table, and you get your strength back, and he said, no. He tells the servant, now after he's worked all day out there, and I don't know, what's the master been doing? Maybe he's been sitting up there on veranda watching the guy out there in the field, you know, with his feet up and sipping tea. I don't know. But what he's going to do when he gets in, he's going to say, put your apron on, gird yourself about, put your apron on, and fix me a meal that I can sup, that I can eat. And he says, then he asks the question, the Lord does. He says, now after he's done that, after he's fixed that meal and the servant's eaten, he says, now think about this. He says, does he say thank you? And the Lord said, I love this in the King James. We use this phrase in our family all the time, but he said, I trow not. In other words, I don't think so. I don't think he says thank you. You see, the man he's working with is a slave. You don't say please and thank you to a slave, not the average person, right? They just tell you what to do and what not to do. You and I, hopefully, as Christians, have learned to be supplied. We say please and thank you to people that are rude to us. So he says, does he say thank you? He said, I trow not. And then he makes the application. So you, when you've done all that it was your duty to do, now, I remember the Apostle Paul, when he wrote the Philippian brethren, he said, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended. Now, you know how much Paul did, but he didn't figure he'd done all that he was duty to do yet. That's something, isn't it? You've got to think about that. How much should we be doing that we're not? But he said, so you, when you've done all that it is your duty to do, still say, I am an unprofitable servant. Now, what God was talking about is what you need to have is your outlook on yourself. It should be like, I've never done enough. Not from a self-image viewpoint, like, oh, I'm terrible, I've never done enough. But from this point of view, that my Lord has died for me, and I could wear myself out and die in His service. And in my mind, it would not be enough. But the retirement is well done. How God wants me to look at me about the fact that I have more work to do is not the way He looks at me. Because He looks and says, well done, good and faithful servant, to everyone. Now in the days that ought to come, and the weeks, and maybe even the years, Lord willing, you're going to have some moments of serious frustration. You're going to see people turn away from truth, and you're going to think, what could I have said? What could I have done? And you'll rack your brain. And sometimes you might throw up your hands. I've seen Christians do this, kind of throwing this, what's the use? What good does it do? You know why lots of places have stopped having gospel meetings? You ever heard the reason? It doesn't do any good anymore. Literally, I held a gospel meeting this year at a place that hadn't had one in 8 years because it didn't do any good. Well, that's what we do sometimes as human beings. We kind of throw up our hands and say, well, what's the use? Nobody's listening. Why go door knocking? You know what? When you go door knocking, you could door knock maybe a dozen Saturdays in a row and never get a yes. Right? But see, you don't know what'll happen if you door knock that same area a dozen times again, and a dozen times again, and a dozen times again, and a dozen times again. And 6 years from now, you either run into somebody that moved into the area that's ready to say yes, but if you hadn't been knocking, you'd have never known that, or somebody that's there has lost someone and now they're willing to listen, but if you hadn't been knocking, you wouldn't have known that, or a brand new baby has been born into a family and they want to assure that baby's welfare, but if you hadn't been knocking, they wouldn't have thought about it spiritually. And so you just keep on and you keep on. So when you're discouraged, remember, you're not in it for the salary, you're in it for the retirement. You're in it so that one day you will hear God say, well done, good and faithful servant. 2 Timothy chapter 4. The Apostle Paul, the one who in 1 Corinthians 9 said, I buffet my body, bring it into subjection, lest by any means after I've preached others, I myself should be a castaway. The one who said in verse 25 of that same chapter, I'm become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. The one who had written about how he was shipwrecked and beaten and rotted and imprisoned and all of the things that he went through. But then he said, time of my departure is at hand. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 6. He said, even now I'm being offered up. Actually, it didn't say I'm now ready to be offered up. It's what the King James says. He really says in the original language, even now I'm being poured out. But I fought a good fight. I finished the course and I kept the faith. Henceforth, there is crown of righteousness laid up for me. And then he says, this is the part for us, not for me only, but for all of them. Listen to this phrase, but for all of them that love his appearing. Y'all have heard the joke, I suppose, about the man that walked into a bar and ask the question, how many of you want to go to heaven? And everybody in the bar raised their hand except one man. You know the story. And he was puzzled. He said, don't you want to go to heaven? He said, well, yeah, I do, but I thought you was getting up a load to go now. Well, we should be ready to go now. To them that love his appearance. That same concept is contained in Titus 2:11. We know Titus 2:11, right? The grace of God that brings salvation is appeared unto all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. Why is that the case? Because we're looking for the presence, the return of the Lord. Peter says the same thing. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise. Some men count slackness, but is long-suffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Seeing then that all these things should be dissolved, what manner of man ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of the Lord? Why is that? Why would you and I do that? It's not because we don't have other souls we want saved. I've got family members that need to change their life. Every opportunity that I get to talk to them, they don't give me that much, but every opportunity I get, I try to talk, I try to persuade. And I pray for them all of the time. I don't want them to die. But like Paul said, you know, I'm caught in a strait betwixt two, whether to depart and to be with the Lord. He said, or to remain, he said, which is far better for you. Whatever the Lord's will is in that. That's what he was willing to do. That's what you and I should be willing to do. But one day, and I'm getting old enough now that, you know, when I was young, I never thought of it this way, but I'm getting old enough now that I'm kind of like ready. You ever thought about that? The older you get, it's like, I'm ready. It should be that way all the time, right? We should think that way all the time. We should hasten. We should look for the coming of the day of the Lord, because there is a crown of righteousness. That's our retirement plan. There's a crown of righteousness laid up for us. But a couple other things that I listed in regard to that. You know, the retirement plan is great, but the salary is pretty good too, right? Now think about Luke 6:38. Give. Now I realize that in the context he's speaking of money, but there's other stuff involved here in the Christian life. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure. Press. Think about a box of cereal. I used to grade rice. I don't know if any of you know what that means. You grade rice. It's for the government, and you kind of look at it and decide whether this rice is sufficient to send on, or whether you're going to have to scrap it or whatever like that. But the rice would come in a railroad car. You know, a big hopper car. They poured the rice in at the top. It travels miles, and it comes in. And we have this round spear-looking thing. It's kind of hollow, and you stick it down in there. You've seen them maybe do that when they're checking soil samples for a septic. They stick it down in there, and they pull the dirt out, and they start. Well, our job is stick it down in there and get us a little rice. I'm telling you what, we'd literally have to take a pick to that rice. It was so packed. Now, you've used rice. You know how loose it is. Not when it comes in like that. That's what God's referring to here. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over shall men give into your bosom. I mean, God's saying, listen, it's not too bad. Even here on the earth, the salary's not. Now, no man, he said, who's left houses, or lands, or brethren, or mother, or father, but what they will receive in this life a hundredfold, in the life to come, eternal life. But in Mark, he says, in this life a hundredfold with persecution. What he's saying is the salary is great, but you just need to have your eyes open about it. And that brings me to the last thing. And to be honest, we're cutting this lesson about 50 minutes short, right? So, but that brings me to the last thing. And that is, the cost is dear. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my name's sake. For so persecuted they the prophets that were before you. You probably recognize where that's from, right? Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, the last of the Beatitudes in verse 10 there. So blessed are you. What's he saying? He's saying the cost is dear. And 1 Peter 4:12, Peter's writing. He says, beloved, don't think it strange. Let me use a word we would use. Don't think that it's unusual concerning the fiery trial that shall come upon you, as though some strange thing or some unusual thing is happening to you. It's the same thing that's been happening to the people of God from the beginning of time. The people of God were never the popular ones. The people of God were never the ones that everybody wanted to hear from, because our message is do this or die. Nobody wants to hear that. But that's the message. While the cost is severe, the salary is pretty good. I'll tell you, I didn't know you, brethren, very well before I came down here. I'd met you, and had a chance to talk with Josh a little bit more, and I had recognized in the congregation here a long time ago an opportunity that the Lord might be able to do some great things. But you know what? If we don't see anyone for another year, 10 years, if some of us never see each other again, even if I forget some of your names, I won't forget the conversation I had with Jack and Janet. I won't forget the conversation I had with Major and Gail. I mean, the dinner and the conversation. that we had there. That salary, the ability for me to drive to Nebraska and get out of the car and go into a mall, and if I had opportunity to talk with somebody, I would meet somebody who knew someone that I know, and that's in an area where the church is not very populated. I told you, well, maybe I didn't tell you. I was traveling in India, came downstairs in a motel and to the room where we ate breakfast. It was pretty much like our rooms here. The food wasn't, but the room was pretty much like that. And so I sat down, and as I sat there, I started looking around the room, and there was a white man sitting over there. Now, in India, that's unusual. At least at that time and in this part of India, that was unusual. And I thought, well, I got to go meet him. You know, I didn't know whether he was European, didn't know whether he was American, English, what he was, but I've got to go meet him. So I get up over there, and I go and introduce myself, and I find out, well, he's American. Well, that's a good thing. And so I said, oh, well, it's good to see you. I said, I'm over here from so-and-so. He says, well, I'm from Arkansas. I said, from Arkansas? I said, my dad was from Arkansas. He said, well, what part of Arkansas was he from? He said, Lynn. He said, I'm from Lynn. He said, that's where I'm from. He said, who was your dad? And I said, his name is Lynn Glenn. He was raised by the Penns. He was my next door neighbor. Who'd have thought? You know what happened? The church sent me. And it's one of those rewards, one of those blessings of the salary that I have here. My kids have traveled a lot. And of course we have too, as a preacher, we've been a lot of places. And what amazes their friends when they travel together and, you know, something happens to the car or they need to stop or whatever, my daughters can always say, well, we know so-and-so in this town. We'll call them. Where's that come from? Because we're together in the church. I was driving up I-55 one time on my way to St. Louis. Actually, I had been on my way to the lectures at Free Harmon, and believe it or not, I lost part of a camper trailer and got free, didn't even know it was gone. It was the top on the trailer. You know, I'm out there jacking it up and nothing's going, you know. Nothing's moving, and I realize it. So I call and find out, and it blew off. It blew off on the interstate back there in Cape. So I'm going back to Cape. I got this fine car. I mean, I thought it was pretty fine at that time. I get just outside of Cape, and the engine blows up. I mean, you know, blows up like in the real blows up. So it's moving, so I roll right off of the exit. I roll into a service station back there with payphones, you know. And I get on the phone, and you know who I call, don't you? I call the church. Don't know anybody there. They put us up. They bought all our parts for us. They fed us. And now, believe it or not, coincidentally, my sister and brother-in-law attend that congregation. And there are people there, one of them who put us up, still going there. That was 40 years ago, wasn't it, or more? A long time ago. That was the salary. And one day, I don't know how it's going to be, but here's the way I like to think it's going to be. One day the Lord's going to say, well done. Enter in. And I'm going to go in and I'm going to look to my right. There's so-and-so. I haven't seen him in 60 years. And I'm going to go over there and, well, there's so-and-so. And, yeah, you know, it'll take me days. I don't know if it'll happen. But with all the frustration that may be ahead of me, don't forget that. Don't forget that while the cost is high, the salary is pretty good on this earth, and the retirement package is unbeatable. My prayer is that these lessons have been beneficial for you. My prayer is that they've been encouraging for you. And if not these, I hope you find some that are. convinced that when the Lord said, say not yet 4 months and then cometh the harvest, I say, you lift up your eyes and look into the fields. They're already white unto harvest. I believe that's still true. And I believe it's still true when he said, the harvest truly is plenteous in Matthew 9, but the laborers are few. Let you and I be among the few. Let's determine, no matter what happens, we're going to be out there in the field. We're going to be swinging the side. We're going to be finding the souls, seeking. Remember we talked about that Sunday? Seeking those who are willing to listen. And for 1,000 no's, I promise you, all it will take to totally recharge your battery is a yes. And the fields are wide in the harvest. There's some yeses that are out there. Tonight, if you're subject to the invitation of Christ, and we all always are, obviously when we're presented here, we're talking about in some public way. You either want the prayers of the church for strength, or you want to ask God for forgiveness, or you want to be baptized into Jesus Christ, because that's what Jesus taught was the way to him. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. The one who believes among those creatures and is baptized shall be saved. One who doesn't believe, well, they're going to be lost. If you need that tonight, we'd love to assist you. If you'd like to ask the congregation for strength in your prayers, we'd love to assist you. If you're not right with God and you want to get right with God, please understand when I say we'd love to assist you, it doesn't mean we make you right or we take away a single sin. God does all of that, but we'll do what God says we can do. We'll assist with the baptism. We certainly will pray on your behalf. And hopefully, shoulder to shoulder, we will consider one another to provoke into love and to good works. Why not answer our Lord's invitation as we stand and sing a song?